going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive, up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
That's right, it is the Going Deep podcast, and we go deep on this episode, all things Canadian football. Yes, it's that time of year where training camp is in session. The regular season is just around the corner. We spoke to CFL Commissioner Stu Johnston not too long ago. If you are a CFL fan, go through our inventory of episodes and find that one. If you're listening on radio, this is a good opportunity for you to like, favorite, share, and subscribe and listen to that one as soon as you've reached your destination, if you're driving or done whatever you are doing, if you are at home. But don't go away from this conversation because it's a really good one, because we have the one and only Michael Pinball Clements, who is always upbeat, always positive, always smiling, and always leaving you thinking and learning about something, not just about football or the CFL, but about life. And this conversation, well, it's no different. So let's listen to and learn from the GM of the Toronto Argonauts, Michael Pinball Clements.
All right, Mr. Clemens, it is that time of year where the weather gets warm and the seats and stadiums for Canadian football get full. And there are two seasons that I think maybe the average fan may not understand. There's obviously in season where the games are won, but there's the business season where organizations are set up for success and players set themselves up for success. If you had to grade the transition from that one season to the next in terms of what you're excited about, what keeps you up at night, where does your mind go?
Well, when we speak to that, a great off season is not punctuated by who you think you have, right, and what you think you've done. It's actually not punctuated until 6 months later when the outcome of the season is decided. So this is that time of year where generally every team feels good about what they've done, right? But honestly, we all don't know if we've done enough, right? Because we may have gotten better. We may have gotten considerably better, and other teams have too. In another year, you may not have improved as much as you thought, right? But it turns out to be a year where competitively across the league, so what you can't measure, you can measure what you have done at some level, but you can't quite measure, right, what's going to happen on the field and how that turns out. Too many unknowns, which include injuries. And the other thing is you cannot know and understand completely what your opposition has done.
Self-assessment, I think, is one of the most important skills in life. And when you're at BMO, up in that suite, you're not just kissing babies and signing autographs. You're making some notes. When you look at last year's team trying to turn the page to this year, where were some of the areas of growth you were looking to attack this offseason to continue to improve the franchise?
When we look at this, we look at it in a more holistic standpoint. So a big part of this is trying to manage, right, your losses, because in a game where they're somewhere around 70 to 80 players that come in and out of your doors in the course of a season, there's a lot of change. And so with us, we've had some 20 players that have you know, in the last three seasons that have gone to other places, and 20 plus for sure, but about 20 of those guys are all-stars or on the edge of all-star players. And so when you look at that and the carnage there, we can't say that that's a good thing, right? But what we try to do is retool. And, you know, understanding that, you know, especially when you have success, right, teams are going to be more interested in your players. And because of the nature of our league and the way things are set up, we don't have baseball's 10 to 20 year contracts. I think there was some contracts lately have been these huge numbers, right? Ours is 2 to 3 years, and it is the nature of the economics of our business as well, and so consistent with that, we want to each year think of reset, not regret.
Some I love that.
Players will come and some players are going to go, but we want to reset, not regret. And that, you know, at the end of it, yes, we're going to lose some guys that are very valuable to us, not only as players, but in the locker room. And certainly that has happened, and we've been able though to have that reset and have similar kinds of players that have come in and substituted, and maybe not in the same area, right? But there's a number of guys that you need to have in terms of leaders and guys who have experience. You need some fresh talent to come in as well, and so we've been extremely proficient at that, and I think one of our greatest points of success.
On a personal level, how do you deal with that? You have players, you give them a role, an opportunity, a platform for success. Like anyone in life, you want to see them graduate and go on and get more and help their family. But at the same time, in the locker room, when you break it down, you say 1, 2, 3 family. You bring some of these players over to your house. You talk to them about things that are much greater than football. How do you deal with the of the roster and losing some of those key people?
I'm comfortably uncomfortable. So in saying that, you would rather have them than not have them. But we understand that it is a part of the game, and you know, some are going to, as we've had 2 players this year, seek opportunities in the NFL, and most of them will end up in other places and on other teams, and sometimes they're simply retiring, right? And so, you know, that one is much easier to applaud. But in saying that, right, what our job is to do is to make the best of today, right? And if we continue to make the best of today, tomorrow will generally take care of itself. So being diligent in today and today's work, and understanding that, yes, there is going to be change. There is going to be turnover. And part of doing our best today is actually looking forward and understanding that and preparing for those kinds of challenges.
You were able to reset in a big way, obviously, last year, given, you know, the team success that you had. Remember when you lost those AA batteries, AJ and Andrew? I was like, well, what's going to happen in the backfield? And then Kadeem Carey comes in, fits in, and it's almost like, you know, he was there the entire time. Are there any individuals this year you were able to bring in and help you reset that you're excited about in terms of how they're going to fit the culture, how they're going to fit the scheme?
We are excited, and we don't want to get ahead of things. But I'm going to speak very generally on this topic because don't want to put any undue pressure on guys. But we are really excited about some of the young guys that we've brought in that may have a chance to unfortunately supplant veteran guys, and so that's a tough thing. It's a good thing, right? You want to have great young players, and But it's also tough, you know, to see your veteran guys, the guys that have gotten you there before. And so with that, it's not something that I want to announce to the world, but we think that we have a successful reset now. It has been really tough. We've gone to the division final 4 times in a row on several occasions in the modern era since, I think, 58, I think, is what we call the modern era. And 6 times in a row is the best that we've done, and that was in the early 2000s. For us, that's a good marker to kind of understand, you know, where we are and how we're doing. And, yeah, we hope that this year we can get there again, because, again, when we get to 5, we're starting to get in rare air. And then we're rarer air if we get to 6, and then and if we get to 7, right, we then actually reach a new milestone.
When you compare that feat to doing it in the past, you talk about, you know, in terms of the modern era, it's more impressive now because of the roster turnover that we've talked about and the fact that rosters were much more stable in the past. You know, I find it funny in the conversation and NCAA football where coaches are complaining that they have to re-recruit their players every year because of NIL. And I'm thinking to myself, that has been the life of a CFL coach for the last decade. I wonder if you talked about the economics of the game now, if there's concern in terms of building the game. When I was young, if I had a Henry Gizmo Williams or a Louis Pisaglia or a Pinball Clemens jersey, I knew I was going to be able to wear it for the balance of their career. And that's certainly not the case in the same way now. In terms of building fandom, do you worry about how fluid the rosters have become now?
You know what? That is a challenge. The bright spot there is that opportunity bring a guy in who is equally or more exciting, and so you know, that's the challenge we relish today. You know, understanding that, you know, there is we move more in general. The world has become smaller. And we've gotten more comfortable with changing places, and we want to find, you know, that, you know, the best opportunity I have financially or to play, and those things are important, and so we respect that. And at the same time, we try to not just to refill, but to refine, right? And as a part of that process, we're excited to see, we had a couple of young guys that really outplayed their playing weight this year and hopefully or last year, and I hope hopefully the coming year will prove to be the same.
The world is becoming smaller, but the sports landscape in Canada is quickly becoming much more crowded. No longer are you just sharing the stage with the Blue Jays and the Raptors and the Leafs. Obviously, the CEBL has been a league for a while. The Toronto Scepters have come into the marketplace and had success. AFC Toronto is just started and has the same season as you do. And as you know, a year from now, WNBA Toronto will be here. When you look at making sure that you carve out continually market space for the Argos and continue to grow the fan base that you have, you know, what sort of opportunity and yet competition do you have to carve out a space for now that there's so many more options for the disposable income when it comes to sports?
I'm so excited. It's such an exciting time, and I'm the guy who used to stay after school to watch the women play basketball, right? And it is so good to see them having opportunities in different areas. And when you speak to that, right? When we speak of if we could use another arena, right? We say movies, right? All of these great movies are coming out, right? Generally, that's not a bad thing. It just means we're going to go to the movies more often. And so, consistent with that, we need to continue to put out good movies, right? We need to continue to do a solid job of playing an entertaining brand of football, and with the onset of flag football and flag football being in the Olympics, and really, I think one of the greatest growth opportunities. We look at a potential partnership with the Buffalo Bills, that seems to have a lot of legs. And so I think I'm okay to actually say that now out loud, because I think that we are there. And so doing business a little bit differently, I think, is part of the answer to that. And when we look at flag football and it coming to the Olympics in that arena, now we have our own brand where ladies are really going to take the field and be able to show their talents and compete in Olympic games and possibly medal. So I think there are growth in so many areas. Some are more well known and some are lesser well known. But the idea, I think, is growth is happening everywhere, and football is included in that process.
Now, I know when it's time to go to LA, you know, you're going to be chasing another division championship and potential Grey Cup appearance. So maybe in the place of an Argonaut going to the games, can we see you suit up? I mean, it's not even two-hand touch pinball. It's flag. This should be light work for you.
Well, I would say light work, but a heavy lift. So, yeah, I'm way beyond that. Yeah, you know, you do know how old I am, right?
I do, but I also... I do know what you can do with unlimited motion. So, I mean, in a wide field. So just, you know, dust off those Reebok cleats and, you know, it's to make some plays.
All right.
Well, you talked about, you know, all of the sports and how excited you are. And I would be remiss if I let you go without turning you from general manager to analyst, because I know you are a hooper and a lover of the sport and a mainstay at Scotiabank Arena cheering on your Raptors. And I would love to know, after a, you know, a long day of training camp, when you get the recliner set up and you turn on the NBA playoffs and you see not just great competition, but great competition with Canadians every night. What's that been like for you, and where does your basketball mind go when you look at who might be a potential NBA champion this year?
Well, you know, I'm a huge basketball fan and absolutely love it. And wow is what I say. But if I can preface by saying this before we move on to basketball, right, that when we talk about being able to sustain success, I think what often gets left out is not the what we don't have, but what we do have. And what we do have here, right, is a history, right, that we can certainly have a level of comfort that the Don Matthews and Doug Flutie's of the world that influence my era and my understanding, and they propelled me to another level in every sense of the word, and still quote them at times today. And as we look at that then, you know, I guess what I want to say, and I think, you know, something that doesn't always get its time is you know, we talk about roster construction and the different things. This roster with the head coach, Professor Ryan Biddy, Dinwiddie, I should say. I called him Professor because he is so learned and a continuous learner. You know, he has put this offense together, but not only the offense, but this coaching staff together. John Murphy has brought the people in, right? He has brought the players in and consistently does that. His mind is like a calculator. Vince Magri, who's now with the Buffalo Bills, you know, a Canadian kid that grew up here, grew up in the city. I have a picture with him when I was still playing. I think he was 9 or 10 years old, and I got my arms around him, and you know, so what he's brought, we've got a tremendous young lady named Melissa Frith, who is our director of football operations, and Linda Davis is our MVP, no doubt about it. Danny Webb, he is our equipment manager, and he's our culture carrier. He has been here for 41 years. Dave Silberg works beside him, and also Tom and the whole group. We talk about our doctors, our therapists, our people who do all of the work every day. The consistency of those people, the culture they create, all of those people, when we talk about our doctors and just the many people who put on the double blue on a daily basis, who oftentimes are nameless and faceless, I want to say that there are true champions, and that there are leverage. They're the ones who I think differentiate us from the crowd. It's not what you see on the field all the time, but again, our players are the magic, and it's written right in his name, right? When we talk about Wynton McManus, he is our core leader, and Wynn is right in his name, and so when we talk about those people behind the scenes, and then those people that we have, oftentimes we talk about what we lost rather than what we have. And with that, I just want to salute all the players. I of course can't go through the whole roster. I would if I could, but I want to say that those people are so special and so important, and mirror what is happening in the NBA, because we are seeing our Canadians flourish there. When I think of that These young people were really just being born when I was first here, and you know, football was that passion, right? But you know, I love the it's really close between the two sports, because I really love it and really enjoy it. And what has happened, what has taken off, is truly amazing. I think that the MVP is going to be the MVP again before this year is out.
Well, I love it. And I have to say, although I love Vince, the fact that he has a picture with you when
he was nine doesn't make him special, because if you were a kid in the 90s in the GTA, you probably have a picture with Pinball at some point. So there's a million, you know, adults now who have a Polaroid photo with a smiling Pinball after practice at Arendelle. You mentioned Don Matthews, though, and you talked about roster construction. And I wonder, you know, seeing him up close with someone who was a visionary ahead of his time in terms of the way he used the ratio and how he utilized his Canadians, and, you know, first to really go with an all-Canadian offensive line and, you know, have tweeners on the edge that could rush the pass, but, you know, beat impact, you know, against the pass and in zone coverage. What have you, did you learn from him that you apply in how you view the game, but also how you view handling the organization and the people within it?
So as leaders, I don't try to be him, right? Because we're different. There's no question about that, right? The end point, right? How we get there is different, right? But understanding the same input, and yes, there are many things that we use and embody. The when he stood up in front of the audience, he commanded the audience. I can't be him, so I try to do that in a different way, right? When we look at his will to win and his capacity to paint the picture, there's only one Don Matthews. No one often replicated but never duplicated. Right? He is one of a kind. But he taught me so many things. In terms of how you build up players, empower players, put them in the best chance, give them the best chance to be successful. I didn't think I would ever be a full-time running back in pro football, right? I started out as a down in the NFL as a returner and a third down back, and when I came here, you know, the first year, that was my main role. I did get a chance to play running back a couple of times when our running back got hurt for a couple of games. But once he was healthy, I went right back to that. And I thought that was, you know, what I was going to be. And only my second year, he arrives and he says, I want you to be the tailback that plays full time. And so his thought process in that and how he shaped that. I didn't just play. I was actually the MVP of the league that year. And that was it was because of him, not me. Right. And his ability to see things differently. He is one of the most, probably the most impactful person that I've been around in terms of the game. When I think of Doug Flutie, he is very similar to that, and they were both here at the same time, and so I got the double stuff so the second time around, that was his second time here, I should say. So when Doug came in, and so that was a whole new opportunity there, where he moved me from running back position to a receiver. And so regardless of what time he was in, he was before his time.
What does success look like for the Argos this season? How do you define it? What is that barometer, that metric that you were looking at?
Our barometer really is playing in the last game in November. Sometimes you have seasons where you have to modify your expectations. But I wouldn't be honest if I said that it was something less than that.
Love it. And lastly, there's been an ongoing conversation around the Argos and making sure that the city is excited. And lots of reasons have been given in the past as to, you know, why maybe the support didn't reach the level of the play on the field. Well, we need a consistent winner. We need a great venue. We need a great schedule. We need an outdoor stadium. We need grass. So now at this point, all of those excuses have really been crossed off, including we need committed ownership. And so I'll allow you to transfer from GM to marketer. You're preaching to the choir with me, but in terms of the football fan base and it rallying around this team, this product, and coming out for a good time this summer and fall, what's your elevator pitch?
I have been around the game here for so long, and it certainly has evolved. I think we try to over-explain, you know, why, right? I just really want people to come down and have a good time, right? To be able to enjoy themselves, cheer for their team, and whether it be us or the opponent, right? That we have so many transplanted Canadians in Toronto, and so if you're not cheering for us, come and cheer for your team, whoever that is, and I think that. We need to be a little bit more confident and a little bit more assertive. When people come to the game, they enjoy the game, and with few exceptions. And so I think the way the product is packaged is important. I think you will see some new opportunities. I think there are some great opportunities that people have to come down, whether it be during the exhibition or the first game of the year when they're going to give out 10,000 replica rings from a Grey Cup victory a year ago. With that, I think we get so involved in the why not more. I think we just need to be busier and ask people to come. Right. We need to make that ask in many different ways. We have even the area that the stadium is in right there with the population just going up with all of the high rises that sit around us and taking advantage of those opportunities. They are plentiful. So I think it's just time to stop talking about it and go out and execute it.
And the congregation said amen. Well said. Listen, normally at this time, I would say, hey, enjoy the season. But I don't have to tell you to do that because I know you will. Continued success and continued smiles. Thank you so much for this, Pin.
Always a pleasure, good sir. And thank you so much.
Thanks so much to Pinball. And you can get your tickets now for the Argonauts. And also, if you want to support all of his philanthropic endeavors, the Michael Pinball Clemens Foundation is where you can support him. And you heard him talking about it. The MVP of multiple things. MVP of the regular season. MVP of the Western Conference. Finals. Could have the triple crown and be the MVP of the finals. He's just four wins away. Is SGA. And it's not just him. Shout out to Montreal. And Lou Dort also making a final. We'll talk about the year of SGA next after the break. Stay with us.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson has a show.
And I'm so happy that you're listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had a show. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Grandma and Granddad. It is Going Deep, and we are going to go deep on all things SGA because he's having a moment right now. Show, and I'm going to say something outlandish, but I think it is based in empirical evidence. You let me know if you agree.
Can I guess what you're going to say?
Yeah, please hit me.
I think, because you love making big statements.
Do I?
You're going to say that what SGA is doing is greater than anything Steve Nash did.
Ish, yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess so, yeah. If you want to sum it up and make it a one-word headline, yes. Listen, no Canadian basketball player ever has had the calendar year that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has had. One, had a kid. That's a lot. Many Canadian basketball players clearly have done that, but I'm adding that in there because it puts everything else in great context because everyone knows that first year of having a child, it is a blessing before the internet comes for me, but it's also very arduous. But just over a year ago, leading into this regular season, leads Canada to the Olympics for the first time since, as you mentioned, Steve Nash. But the run that he's been on in terms of making yet another all-star team, being all NBA, having the best record in the NBA, and having the best point differential in the modern era of the sport, wins an MVP, wins Western Conference Finals MVP, essentially every night in the NBA playoffs with defenses geared to stop him, he's giving you 36-5 over and over and over again. Last time someone has done this consistently, his name was Michael Jeffrey Jordan. But that's like the basketball stuff. His shoe is fire, show. And not only is the shoe fire, he's got ready, well, Converse has ready, an ad trolling ant with an ant kind of crawling on the clay of said shoe. And it's basically the ad says, what do you have to say now? Because Ant does a lot of talking on the floor, in the media, and his Adidas commercials have been all about the fact that he's doing all the talking and shutting everyone up. Well, no, Shai is sending your favorites NBA stars, favorite NBA star home. John Morant, peace. Joker, I'm the real MVP. Ant, I'm the one for this next generation. You don't want to be the face of the league? It me. But also, because Canada first, my guy has rolled out a one-of-one Canada Goose vest, which is A1. It's clearly not only the best player, the most fashionable. If he finishes and gets the Triple Crown and gets a Finals MVP, this is going to be among one of the best singular regular seasons, not for a Canadian, of any basketball player in the modern era. But yes, since you asked, he already, at the age of 26, is the best Canadian basketball player ever. Now you're going to say, oh my goodness, his career is so early. Well, let's not do that yet. Nash had two MVPs. Yeah, he's got two MVPs. One in the playoffs, one in the regular season. He's got two. I would argue that the one in the playoffs counts for a lot. Could get another one, as we said. But oh my goodness, Nash had a great career. We forget, Shai averaged 20 points per game in his second year in the league. There's a handful of Canadians who have ever averaged 20 points a game. Ever. Wiggins can give you 20. Obviously, Nash in his prime. But the list isn't that long. So the fact that he, a four-star recruit not that long ago, has become the best player in the sport, no Canadian has ever reached this level, including Steve Nash.
You know, it's funny. The first jersey my dad ever got for me when I was younger was a Phoenix Suns Steve Nash jersey, which I still have, like a child size Phoenix Suns Nash jersey. And I'm still kind of with you. Like Steve Nash has a special place in my heart, but for someone who never played for the Raptors, obviously, but Shai, what he's doing is just it's just so cool. I'm not sure I love this Canada Goose vest thing. This looks like a military vest, essentially.
Oh, no.
And it doesn't, not super fashionable. But the shoes are pretty cool, though. I will say, I mean, much better than Steph's really ugly shoes. Like, my goodness, those are some hideous shoes. But the Converse ones from Shai look good. So at least he's keeping up on that end. But yeah, let me ask you this, because I'm with you on all the greatness, all the things he's doing on a basketball court. What do you make of what people refer to as him being a free throw merchant? And I'm just curious to get your take on this, because it was pretty funny. I think it was Doris Burke during one of the games, and she called him a free throw merchant. And I was listening to it, and I thought, wow, that's kind of harsh, right? And then I listened to what she was saying, and I think she doesn't know. She didn't understand that it's necessarily a bad thing to be referred to as that. But I am curious, when you hear that and you see his game, what you think.
Well, one, I now know why I don't go to you for fashion takes. Because the vest is fire. And actually, Steph's shoes are not only technically great, I have hooped in them, they're also fire. So the blasphemy coming from you about fashion.
They're like white shoes. Steph Curry's shoes. They're like the least sexy shoes a superstar could possibly wear.
This is exactly, again.
This is an old man take.
No,
I'm sorry.
No, this is an old man take, because the shoes, I don't know what you Googled, what image search you have, but the shoes come in various colorways, many themed, some collabs. So no, they're not white shoes. These are not barbecue Bobs that you just slide on and go to the porch and flip some burgers. These are high performance
Under Armour
basketball
shoes. Generally speaking, are just ugly.
No,
just
I will not take this
just generally.
No,
speaking.
No. UA is for the kids, so, which is why you clearly don't like it. The point about the free throw merchant is, and I will now throw to the sound and give you more work. Well, who cares what I think about Shea being a free throw merchant? Here's how he answered the question in a post-game presser.
I know you don't necessarily put a lot of stock into the chance, but what do you think of the free throw merchant, whatever you want to call it, label, accusation?
Like, the way I see it is, like, the fans, they're going to do whatever they can do to help their team win and knock me off my game, being the head of the snake of our team. Like, and that's their job. That's what creates home court advantage. That's what creates a fan base. That's what creates energy in the building. And they want the Timberwolves to win. They don't want the Oklahoma City Thunder to win. So I expect nothing else. And in terms of the label, I don't care. I never cared. I said this before, like, I've shot more free throws in a season than I did this season. Like, I think because we're on the top of everyone's radar, it's a little bit more noticeable, and now people care about it. But I kind of see it as a compliment.
Shea has averaged more free throws in the past. Nobody cared because he wasn't playing in primetime on ABC and TNT and sending your favorite player packing. But also, let's just look at the other people who have been league MVP, finals MVP, which he's about to be, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James. You know what they all did? Dirk. They all averaged the same, if not more times than not, more free throws than Shea is averaging right now. It's not an egregious amount. So this tells me one thing. One, people aren't watching the game. Because two, you know when I would argue a third to half of his free throws come? At the end of the game, when you're trailing against the Thunder, you need to foul to extend the game. And he's their best free throw shooter, and he uses that short area quickness to get open and take those shots. So, one, that we need to remove those from the sample. But two, you can't guard him. And so the prospect of sending him to the line for two is often better than him draining a mid-range jumper in your eye. But more importantly, you can't stay in front of him, so you are forced to foul him. Does he elaborate and draw calls? I mean, I think there's a game within the game. But we're not talking about James Harden. We're not talking about Chris Paul flopping. We're not even talking about Luka, who not only baits for fouls, but then cries and lies on the ground like a beached whale afterwards and doesn't run back on defense. Here's my final word on this. Here's why he is not a foul merchant, a free throw merchant. Because tell me the last time or first time you've heard or seen SGA complain about a call. He doesn't cry. He doesn't yell at the officials. He doesn't do the obligatory, hey! The obligatory, and one! Like, before he's even in the gather, in the shooting motion, Draymond is the worst for that. And one! Always calling for the call before it's a call. SJ doesn't do that. He's a good Canadian boy, not to sound like another Canadian broadcaster that loves to give hot takes, but he may bait you into fouls, but he's not trying to bait the refs. This is not simulation. There's no diving like the soccer. He's just a master at the craft. keeps you off balance, forces you because he changes speeds and he plays offbeat a little bit. Like he's not a techno beat. He's more like a, you know, reggaeton, maybe, I mean, a piano. Point is, he keeps you guessing, which is why he's the MVP, which is why he's not a free throw merchant, and which is why this is the year of SJ.
I do really enjoy watching his game, as you're saying, DB, because I think you're trying to describe the way he plays basketball. I've heard people say he slithers to the basket, and I find that so appropriate because he really, like, he contorts his body in the most ridiculous but also impressive ways. I quite enjoy watching him play basketball, and I can't wait to watch him suit up for Team Canada. I mean, if he wins a trophy with the Thunder, I think he's the best player in franchise history, like even with a franchise that's had Kevin Durant, and if you want to count all the players who played for the Supersonics as well, I suppose you can, but I certainly think if he's like the first guy to win a ring, that immediately vaults him to the top. I mean, I know his Wikipedia page says he's from Toronto, but I think he generally identifies as being from Hamilton. And I mean, there are a lot of pretty great athletes who come from Hamilton. I mean, I think Pat Quinn was from Hamilton. Ken Dryden is from Hamilton. I think he's probably at the top of that list. But I mean, after those two guys, I find it hard pressed to say that he's not like immediately, he might already be the second greatest athlete from Hamilton, second to only Ken Dryden, who won like a million Stanley Cups. But I mean, that's pretty incredible to be so high in estimation of so many people at the age of 26. It's pretty cool.
He was born in Toronto, lived there when he was young. Family moved to Hamilton. So Hamilton is where he claims. He comes back every offseason and trains there and lives in the Halton region. I don't know what it is because I don't think of Hamilton as the most fashionable place in the world. But Sarah Nurse, friend of the program, also from Hamilton. And I would argue that if Shea is the fit god in the NBA, Sarah Nurse would be the fit god in the PWHL. Kia Nurse, obviously a great hooper, who's had a great career, also from Hamilton, but this is the year and the moment for SJ, and it's really a moment for Canada basketball. If you're listening to this, you didn't listen to our conversation, go back in the archives. We talked to Michael Bartlett about what it's been like to watch so many great Canadians in the postseason and every night throughout, whether it's this round. He had Nikhil Alexander-Walker, his cousin, who is from Toronto, hitting big shots. Obviously, Lou Dort with those rain ball threes on the end of passes, you know, on time, on target from Shea. Flip to the east, and you have Andrew Nembhard making big plays on both ends. Benedict Mathurin, when his name has been called, has been hitting big shots. And even earlier in the playoffs, Dylan Brooks was a monster in his series. Zach Edey got some meaningful minutes for the Memphis Grizzlies. There's been so many great Canadians, and you mentioned it, looking ahead to what this national team will be like in the next World Championships in a couple years, or in the Olympics in LA in 3 years. All these playoff moments are going to be so, so valuable when we are playing for medals. If you want to see the kids in the pipeline, Global Jam is this summer in Toronto, also on Sportsnet. So there's a chance before then to see some CanCon, if you will, but there's going to be a chance to see great CanCon in the NBA Finals. And a big reason in terms of the Thunder getting there is because of SGA. It's been his year, as I said. The award for Athlete of the Year, just give it to him right now. Unless Connor McDavid wins the Stanley Cup, and then we're going to have a real debate.
That'd be a great debate. If Connor McDavid wins a Stanley Cup finally, and Shea wins the Larry O'B, that's going to be a pretty fun debate as to like who had the better year.
You say fun. I say toxic. Like I'm afraid where that might go on different areas in the internet.
That's
but
fair.
Listen, good problem to have.
Yeah.
If we have a Canadian leading the way to an NBA title and we have a Canadian team winning a Stanley Cup. But we are still a ways away from that. But no matter what, this has been the year of SGA. My video essay, in terms of the audio portion of it, the year of SJ is right here for you now as we say goodbye and close this episode. Thanks for listening.
Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is something special, and he's going to get my vote.
MVP right now is the baddest mofo. Shut your mouth and leave.
Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, he has gotten a ridiculous feel. Wow.
He's walking into territory that very few Canadians, maybe only one, right, has ever walked into.
This will be remembered as the year of SGA, solidified by an MVP. He was the best player on Canada's first Olympic team of the generation. First ever signature shoe deal for a Canadian. And yeah, just like his fits, they're fire. Cameo in a Drake music video.
Let me see you do your dance, let me see you twirl.
Again, fire fit. His numbers rival that of Steve Nash's back-to-back MVP seasons.
Phenomenal athlete. Quick, change of pace, change of direction, shifty, skilled, elite, elite, elite.
Scoring-wise, they stack up with the greatest seasons of all time. His dad made the case for him for MVP.
Yo, do you believe your son is the MVP?
100%, bro, 100%.
First team All-NBA 3 years straight. He's playing on the youngest team, 61 wins.
Stop this, bro. Let's give it to him this year.
And although he did it with the most Toronto man of accents, he said what all of Canada has been feeling.
Go ahead and give him an award, bro. You got it.
Oh, yeah, he has to get MVP this year. Anything else would be insane.
As other stars run away from being the face of the league, let it be SGA. Consistent, crafty, Canadian. He doesn't chat much about his game.
I'm pretty good at basketball.
Like his outfits, his play is loud.
Shea, what a move. Pulls up and puts it in. Oh, that was dirty.
I'll tell you, he has got some offensive skills, folks.
The word is overdue, but it seems everything for Shea is happening right on time. The player known for playing at his own pace, you can't speed him up or stay in front of him, a walking bucket that will D you up.
We don't talk enough about his defense and how elite he is on that side of the ball.
The haters say he's a foul merchant, but you're better off fouling out than getting crossed up.
Oh, stops, goes right back to work and lays it up and in. Unfair business from SGA.
Sometimes words just don't describe what you just saw. You just say, I gotta see that again. Oh, goodness.
Some MVP awards signify a moment in time. This one feels like a statement that it's SGA's time.
This is like the beginning of a run for him. He's found his groove.
Okay.
And we're going to see this for a window over the next couple years.
Number two is a two-way star. And in 2025, he's been the ascending star that shone the brightest and is now in prime position to continue the trophy hunt.